William Morrow and Harper Audio present The Good Wife of Bath, a novel by Karen Brooks, performed by Fran Burgoyne.
This book is for my beloved friend Kerry Doyle, the best of them. She's a good woman as well as wife in all the wonderful, multiple, contradictory and complex meanings of that word. It's also a salute to all the wives and women throughout time who've been forced for whatever reason to endure, who've been abused and neglected and punished for their strengths and their weaknesses. May your voices be heard as well. By God, if women had but written stories, like those the clergy kept in oratories, more had been written of men's wickedness than all the sons of Adam could redress. The Wife of Bath's prologue, The Canterbury Tales by Geoffrey Chaucer, translated by Neville Coghill. The wisest man in the world is one who doesn't care who's in charge. Attributed to Ptolemy. Prologue. Who Painted the Lion? The Swan, Southwark. The year of our Lord 1406, in the seventh year of the reign of Henry IV. My father would oft remark that the day I was born, the heavens erupted in protest. Great clods of ice rained down upon poor, unsuspecting folk, and the winds were so bitter and cold that those who could remained indoors. Any sod who couldn't risked death in the fields along with the shivering, miserable beasts. He didn't tell me to arouse my guilt, but to remind me to hold up my head and stand proud. I may have been born the daughter of a peasant, but it wasn't every day a lass could say she made her mark upon the world. I came into being on the 21st of April 1352, a day henceforth known as Black Saturday, and not because the woman who'd carried me the last 9 months died moments before I arrived, casting a ghastly pall over what should have been a celebration. The story I grew up with was that my mother's fate was very nearly my own, as even in death her womb refused to expel me. It wasn't until the midwife, seeing the rippling of her stomach as if some devil-sent spawn was writhing within, understood the grim reaper had not yet departed the room. He was awaiting another soul to carry forth. Wishing him gone, she snatched his sacred scythe from his gnarly hand and ripped open my mother's body and, amidst blood and swollen entrails, pulled me forth like a sacrificial offering of old. My father, hearing the screams of dismay and fear, forwent the sacred rules of the birthing chamber and burst through the door, determining that the shade of blue colouring my flesh, whilst it looked fine upon a noble woman's mantle, was no colour for a babe to be wearing, hoisted me off the bloodied rushes where the midwife had dropped me, and, ordering her to cut the umbilicus, swung me by my ankles, slapping my flesh until it turned a much happier puce. Only then did I bawl, loud, long, and lusty. The midwife promptly fainted. My father gathered me to his chest, laughing and crying while I hollered noisily, competing with the raging storms outside. It was decided then and there, or maybe this is something I invented later, that though I was born under the sign of Taurus, I was a child of Mars, a fighter who stared death in the face and scared him witless. Papa declared, and the midwife, who came too at my screams, concurred. The moment I burst into life, the reaper picked up his robes and fled the room. He even forgot his scythe. But Mars was not alone when he blessed me with the blood and spirit of a warrior. Oh no. For while Papa, unaware Mama had died as he tried to soften my cries and sought for something in which to swaddle me, Venus, Mars's wanton bride, peered over his shoulder. Because she liked what she saw, she leaned forward and placed the sweetest of kisses upon my puckered brow. Not
Sample complete. Ready to continue?